Welcome to the ICEF podcast, where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF CEO Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. The ISF podcast celebrates 10 years this year. Over the decade that we've been in your ears every week, Steve has interviewed a lot of fascinating people. Visionary business leaders, neuroscientists and physicists, world leaders, and formerly notorious cyber criminals, just to name a few. We have touched on topics like AI, the human mind, cyber resilience, leadership, and the future of technology and society. So to kick off 2026, we wanted to give you a look back, highlighting the very best of this first decade of the ISF podcast. And don't worry, we'll link all the episodes in the show notes. We start with a conversation with Mo Gadot, author and former chief business officer of Google X. He spoke with Steve in early 2023, just as ChatGPT had hit the scene and offered a, well, concerning outlook on the future of AI.
What do you see as the future of AI?
Complicated. The way we look at AI, most computer scientists will say that the future is a singularity. We don't really know what the future will look like. We know a few things. I call them the inevitables, basically. Right. We know that AI is going to be part of our life. It's already part of our life. You know, I don't know how any of our audiences or where they're listening from or what they've done today, but I can guarantee you they've interacted with multiple AIs today already. Sometimes not even noticing that they interacted with them. And it's already integrated. It's already part of an interesting prisoner's dilemma, if you want, that there is no stopping the development of AI. So it's going to be more and more and more integrated into our life simply because of competitive setups in our capitalist system. You know, if Google is developing AI, Facebook will develop AI. So there will be more and more of them. The more interesting side of it is that the future predicts clearly that the AI will be smarter than all of us humans. Right. As a matter of fact, collectively, there are predictions that by 2045, they'll be a billion times smarter than us. That's a billion with a B, which, you know, to simplify the analogy, this is like the intelligence of Einstein compared to a fly.
Steve has interviewed many researchers over the years. Back in 2021, he spoke with Dr. Brian Cox, a professor of particle physics at the University of Manchester, who worked on the ATLAS experiment at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland. Here are Steve and Dr. Cox talking about conveying technical information to laypeople, an ever-important skill in the world of cyber.
Most of our podcast listeners are security professionals. They often have to communicate complex, some would say esoteric, concepts, ideas, to boards and colleagues within their own organizations. And sometimes those people don't necessarily speak the same language, if you see what I mean. Mm. So I'm curious, what insights do you think you could offer up to the security professional that would help them to get some of those, you know, complex ideas across in a way that is engaging, very much like you did for us just in October?
Well, thank you for saying that. I think the key thing, which should go without saying, but doesn't necessarily, is you have to understand what you're talking about very deeply.
Right.
And I think that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but I don't think it is. I find that when we're talking about, I was talking about relativity, which is, in some sense, you know, it's got a reputation for being arcane. But I teach the basics, so-called special relativity at University of Manchester, right, to first years. It's one of the first courses that they do when they come in at 18 years old after A-level. And I find that I get a deeper insight into it pretty much every year. And so I think a key thing is not to kid yourself that you understand something at a deep level.
Right.
Because I mean, I honestly find that I'm quite slow quite often at picking up concepts because I really want to convince myself that I have a deep understanding of the concept. And I think once you've done that and gone through that process yourself, then it becomes easier to communicate it because you've gone through the, you started out as that person who knew nothing about it.
Right.
And so I suppose another tip would be to remember that you started out as that person that didn't understand it and remember those steps that you went through right. to get some kind of a deeper understanding of the subject.
Another researcher and renowned science communicator, Dr. Hannah Fry, joined the podcast during the first winter of the pandemic. Dr. Fry had just released her book, Hello World, How to Be Human in the Age of Machines, where she, among other things, wrote about the rise of personal data collection.
One of the stories that you go into in here is, of course, the one around Cambridge Analytica, which everyone is probably familiar with. Do you have concerns about the way that data obviously was used in that instance, but is still being used today?
Yes. Yes, but I'm almost, yes, depressingly, I'm almost giving up. I think if people were aware of just how far things have gone in terms of our data, just how much is known about us, just how much is inferred about us, I think it's really shocking, right? I mean, okay, so there was a federal report, this is a couple of years ago now, so maybe 2016 or so, which looked at data brokers. Mm-hmm. So people whose entire business is based on the idea of collecting data about individuals, categorizing it, and then selling it on. So somewhere in the world, there is a file with your name on it. Mm-hmm. And in that file will be some record of all of the things that you've done online. So in that file, there are things like, you know, standard stuff like your sex, your age, your income bracket, you know, your ethnicity, that kind of thing. But also things like whether you've ever had an abortion, if you're a woman, whether you're gay, your true sexuality and your claimed sexuality, as it were, whether there's a difference between the two, how risk-taking you are, whether you've ever used drugs. I mean, all of these things can be inferred about us. And I think that this is something that is currently very invisible to us. And I can't help but feel as though, I always think about drones when it comes to this. You know, when drones were first around, they'd pop up everywhere, right? You go to the park and people would be flying them around and then you'd fly over your house. And it was really annoying. You go to the beach and there'd just be drones everywhere. And quite quickly, we brought in regulations and legislation to stop that from happening because it was just, people just felt really uncomfortable with it. And I can't help but think that the way that data is used, save for a few bits of regulation like GDPR, actually, we are unprotected against the worst excesses of it because it's invisible to us, and so we're not outraged by it in quite the same way.
Innovator and thought leader Peter Hinson has been on the podcast a couple of times. In this clip from his second conversation with Steve, Peter shares his thoughts on how business leaders best support their employees during a time of rapid technological transformation.
So let me ask that question. How do you do it?
Well, I think, first of all, acknowledging the fact that it's there. Right. And second of all, showing that it's not new is good, old is bad. How are you going to put that together? How to build that mindset in the organization where you're going to try and figure it out together? I wrote a book called The Phoenix and the Unicorn, and I was getting a little tired of the unicorn stories. Every conference you went to, it was Uber this, Airbnb that. But most companies are never going to be Airbnb. And I wanted to find phoenixes. And these are companies that can reinvent themselves, that actually go through difficult times, but become a stronger version of themselves. And I really believe after a decade of unicorn applause, we're now going to have a decade of potential phoenixes out there. And I think a big part as a leader in such a phoenix transformation is to actually give your workforce, your people, that sense of we're going to do this together.
Another repeat offender, literally in this case, is former U.S. Most Wanted cyber criminal Brett Johnson, the original internet godfather. In this clip, Steve and Brett discuss the evolution of ransomware attacks.
Let's talk about ransomware, estimated to have grown something like 350% last year.
Right.
How do you see that evolving over the next 12 to 18 months?
Well, I am the, I was asked about that 2 years ago. And I was like, you know what? It's a great business model. And I think that as a business, it's just going to continue to grow. And I went on to say that what I thought would happen is as that business model becomes more of a business itself, we'll see that people who pay ransom, the attackers will actually give the data back. Because if they didn't, what's the incentive to pay ransom to begin with? Well, it turns out that I was only thinking about that from a monetary standpoint. So that motivation is cash. Well, there are three motivations. You've got cash, status, ideology. If you're installing ransomware because of ideology, you're not giving back the data. You don't really care about the ransom. That's just a benefit. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that ransomware is also being installed because of this ideology, or maybe even because of status. The attacker really doesn't care or is not going to give back the data. That presents an entirely new problem. Because if it's just forecast, you have a lot of people out there, BitPamer and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those guys give back the data.
Right.
Not only do they give back the data, but they actually have customer service that will remote in and make sure you get the data back.
Right.
The other attackers aren't like that. So, and not only that, but if you pay the ransom, you're just making the crime more prolific at that point. They're just going to tell, oh, it worked here, it'll work someplace else. I'm not for paying ransom at all. I'm for doing making sure everything's backed up.
Some household names have appeared on the show over the years. In one of our favorite ever episodes, Steve sat down, virtually, with Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple turned philanthropist, to answer questions from ISF members. Speaking a year before the release of ChatGPT, Woz pours cold water on the intelligence of artificial intelligence.
There's artificial intelligence is sort of the one you hear about the most, and I hate it every time I hear about something with AI because it's not intelligence. It's just the highest application of computers today that can sort of watch what you do and then kind of learn what things are out of the regular. That would be good for watching big data centers for intrusion attempts and what you do normally. So when you start typing words, it sort of knows which one you're most likely to type out of all the possible choices. These things are good things, but I don't call them intelligence.
Right.
You can show 80,000 pictures of dogs to Google. I say this a lot. And Google can recognize a dog faster than any human being alive. And you say that's intelligence. Like we used to say, playing chess is intelligence. And these are just really algorithms applied to where if you play a million games, a billion games of chess, and remember them all, if a human could do that, you'd be the smartest human in chess in the world. But it's not really intelligence. Do we know how the mind works playing chess? We don't know how the mind is wired or how it works. I guarantee that. I studied as a psychology major at Berkeley, and we just sort of have little tidbits of things we can detect, and we sort of pretend we know how it might work. We don't even know that memories are in the brain. Much better evidence that memories are in your teeth, believe it or not. So if we knew how the brain was wired, we could build one. I was at a company once, and the engineers did come up with how to make a brain. It takes 9 months.
In 2021, retired Southwest Airlines captain and former naval aviator Tammy Jo Schultz joined Steve on the podcast to talk about leadership. In this clip, Captain Schultz tells the hair-raising story of a potentially deadly accident at 32,000 feet.
So when we took off from LaGuardia, beautiful day, full of passengers, heavy with fuel, headed for Dallas, all seemed well. And around 32,000 feet, about 20 minutes into the flight, we felt an explosion before we heard it. And then the minute we heard it, the aircraft experienced a jolt, kind of like what you would imagine a Mack truck makes when it hits the side of something. Darren and I both thought we'd been hit by another aircraft. The jolt was so violent and the nose pitched over. We went into a snap roll to the left and the aircraft skidded sideways. We gained control of the aircraft and brought it wings level upright and let it continue descending because we knew without one engine at that high of altitude, we couldn't maintain altitude. We'd depart the aircraft if we tried. So we allowed it to continue the dive, but all the things that happened all within 1 second, less than a second of time, is what I just told you. And then we could see the engine instruments rolling back on number one, meaning we'd lost number one, which is a captain's side engine. And then there was this shuddering that ensued and a roar that engulfed every sound. And we couldn't breathe. There was a stabbing pain in our ears and realized the smoke wasn't the only thing that caused seeing or breathing hard to do. And so we knew that we'd had a rapid depressurization and somewhere there was a big hole in our aircraft.
Cybersecurity is, of course, the principal topic of this podcast. Since we ran our first episode in 2016, Steve has interviewed cyber experts from all fields and backgrounds, covering everything from cyber resilience, current and future threats, cyber in the board, skills shortages, and more. In a conversation with Dr. Sadie Kreese, professor of cybersecurity at Oxford University, Steve asked Dr. Kreese about her view on the current threat landscape.
Your research, as I say, does cover risk analysis. It does look at malware, ransomware, threat detection in particular. So what's your assessment of the current threat landscape?
Well, some things are as they have ever been, but I suspect that the thing I think is perhaps most significantly worrying is actually the supply chain attacks. And the reason why is because what we're seeing there is an exploitation of attack surface that is not about technology only, it's about these relationships. And that's very sophisticated and very hard to counter. Most organizations, they spend years cultivating partnerships, relationships, they sign contracts of service. As you know, it can cost an awful lot to go through a procurement process. So there's going to be a certain amount of pressure to almost disbelieve the fact that there's vulnerability there.
Right.
So an element of delusion, perhaps it's not going to happen to me. And I almost feel it reminds me of the year 2000.
Okay.
And in the year 2000, if you went to go and sell managed intrusion detection systems, if you weren't talking to a firm that had been hacked, you didn't stand much of a chance because people in those days felt that perhaps it would never happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they'd never get hacked. Whereas now, everybody's getting hit and we're getting hit at home, in our personal lives, at work. You know, most people we know will have been subjected to some phishing attack on their email at some point, even if they don't work for a company that's been hacked. And so it's become normal for people to try and hack you. And so you can kind of admit it to yourself and you can admit it to others. And that's actually the first step, I guess, in making sure you take action.
When it comes to cyber and technology, Steve always returns to the human. To that end, he's often invited guests with surprising backgrounds, like singer-songwriter and activist Sir Bob Geldof, lead singer on the Boomtown Rats, and founding member of Band Aid, famous for raising money for Ethiopian famine relief. Here, Steve asks Bob if he thinks technology can be a force for good.
I'm interested in your thoughts on technology. So, you know, I've heard you talk about the fact that technology is all pervasive. Tell me a little bit about your views more deeply, though. Is it a force for good? Do you see it as something that is for evil? Is it somewhere in between? Where do you really sit in terms of the way that we as society have adopted technology, almost like a third arm?
This is the most significant instrument of change in human history. No question. So, as I say, change can be good or bad. And it's tilting towards the bad in the balance. There is no great virtue in being able to talk to people instantly. There's no great virtue in talking to your actual friends and then having thousands of pretend friends. There's no great virtue in just blurting out unthinking comments and that becoming news. There's no great virtue in any of these things. There is a great possibility which those who wrote the codes regret now that that hasn't been realized. And it has become essentially slave to a newer economy, but no one quite understands how that economy functions. Mm. And it functions at a far faster rate than we actually can process that, than the markets can process it. And that leads to collapse. And the human consequence of that is instability, war, chaos, all those things. We've seen that permanently, though, over the last X years, like at least a decade of this. And we've seen the change that it has produced, whether that's in the migrants currently drowning in the Mediterranean Ocean, whether it's the wars which produce the millions flooding to us for a safer life, whether it's the economic collapse which produces the migrants looking to us for jobs and the collapse of houses, yada, yada, yada. It's done all that.
Last, we bring you a clip from a pandemic conversation with motivational speaker, corporate consultant, and educator Reggie Butler. At a time of workplace upheaval, Steve and Reggie discuss what true leadership looks like.
So for you, what does powerful leadership, leadership with integrity, actually entail today in the kind of pandemic situation that we are in, with all of the sorts of difficulties that we've been talking about? You know, leaders listening to this, what are the sorts of things they need to work on?
The first pillar of leadership that I look at for right now is I try to get most of my leaders, when they sit in positions of influence where they make decisions about other people's lives and how they do their work, I tell them, you have to move from being reactive to responsive. Now, when you're reactive, the decisions are a lot shorter and you make them pretty quick without a lot of thought. Doesn't mean it's not thought, it's just not a lot. When you're responsive, you pause before you make the decision that may impact a group of people. So I try to get leaders to do two things as they're moving up. First of all, pause for yourself, like create space for you to think instead of react to what is coming at you, either externally or internally. And leaders that are actually taking the pause and making it a powerful tool for them and a skill, I've had some leaders say, I actually never do that and didn't realize how valuable pausing is. So I started to create the pause. Really powerful leaders are in spaces right now where they're creating space for themselves, but they're also creating space for other people.
Thanks for listening to this special episode, our best of the last 10 years. Of course, we're looking forward to bringing you new valuable episodes in 2026. So stay tuned.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.